KFSR presents First Ladies Focus, the personal stories behind people who love Fresno State. Featuring Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro, and KFSR Program Director, Julie Logan, 90.7 KFSR.
Good morning and welcome. I'm Julie Logan, Program Director for KFSR, and I am so excited to be part of a brand new show on KFSR called First Ladies Focused. My co-host is Fresno State's very own First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Mrs. Castro, welcome to KFSR.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm really excited about this opportunity to get to celebrate the great things that are going on here at Fresno State, and I appreciate you considering me to be here.
Well, I have to say, when we saw that there was an opportunity that we could get you to be part of KFSR and do a show with us weekly, we were so excited and we are grateful that you're taking time out of your extremely busy schedule to be with us for a half an hour each week. So thank you so much for being here.
Sure, it's a pleasure.
Okay, for our first show, you agreed to let me ask you a litany of questions about yourself to help our listeners get to know you. So,
wonderful.
Let's start from the beginning. You are somewhat a local girl. Tell me about where you are from originally.
Well, very local. I grew up in Layton, which is not far from Hanford. Most people from outside the area don't know where that's at. My dad milked cows, and so for Jack Grimes Dairy, and we lived out on the dairy. Our house was the one that was surrounded by the cows, and which I thought was fantastic as a kid because it gave me a great platform to go out and put on shows. The cows would come right to you. I thought I had this wonderful captured audience, and it ended up they were just looking for food. But no, it was wonderful to be able to grow up in a rural setting. My dad, like I said, milked cows. My mom worked as a certified nurse's assistant in rest homes in Hanford. So they had their schedule set to where I always had a parent. My sister and I have a younger sister. We always had a parent with us. And being so far out in the country, we had a lot of freedom. We could get on our bikes and just take off and be gone all day and come in when it started to get dark. And
that just sounds ideal for a kid.
It was. It was perfect. And it's something that, you know, I wish a lot more kids had the opportunity to be able to just be carefree like that. And it's sad that some of that's lost today. I know that even with my own children, I wouldn't be able to let them do that. But what it did was it instilled in me a great appreciation for this area and what the Valley has to offer. Every time, no matter where we lived, when we would be driving back home and I'd look to the fields to see if they're chopping the alfalfa, and you get that smell it takes you back
so
to
good.
Laying on the grass in your front yard, or just watching them bale hay, and or of course seeing the different herds of cows as you're coming down I-5. So there's all these connections that become a part of you when you grow up in the Valley that don't leave you no matter wherever you go.
I'm a local girl too, and I was in Northern California for a while, and I can tell you that I very much missed Central California and specifically the Fresno Clovis area. So, you know, we're on the same page as far as that's concerned. So tell me about where you went to school.
I went to school at Layton Elementary from kindergarten until sixth grade with the same group of kids. It was wonderful.
That's so nice.
We all kind of were moved up together and all had similar backgrounds, being in a small school in a small setting. We had a lot of access to our teachers, and we had just some wonderful elementary school teachers there at Layton Elementary that really fostered my love for education and my love for reading. When I was 7 years old, I had Guillain-Barré syndrome, and I actually missed the whole first grade year of school.
Wow.
And for a period of time, I was in San Francisco in the hospital, and it had progressed to the point to where I was paralyzed from the neck down. And then after a course of treatment, I was able to slowly recover.
But that's an amazing story.
The amazing part was that there was this wonderful teacher's aid librarian there at Layton Elementary who took me on as a special project. And her name was Mrs. Myers. And she would come out to our house, which as far out as we were, I was always the first kid picked up and the last one dropped off on the bus. But she took special interest and would come out there and tutor me. And she didn't let me off the hook. She saw potential in me that she fostered, and she gave me a drive to work harder. And she told me that, you know, if I worked harder, I could even skip a grade. And to me, that was just wonderful, because even at that age, when they told me, you're never going to walk again, I said, no, I'm going to walk. When they said, you're going to miss a year of school, no, I'm not going to miss a year of school. So I had this little feistiness.
What a great spirit.
Paired up with an incredible educator who went that extra mile, brought me extra books, tutored me. And then once I was able to go back to school, she gave me opportunities to become a tutor even for students who were older than myself.
That is amazing.
So she showed me that, you know, not only could I do more, but that I could help others to do better. And that was the lesson that I learned, you know, in second and third grade that really stuck with me. And
that's incredible. You can never underestimate the power of a great teacher.
That's right. That's right. And the other thing that happened during that period was my first grade teacher, Mrs. Fox, she kept me connected to the classroom. There was a period of time I wasn't there for 6 months, and she kept me connected by having my classmates make cards, get well, that type of stuff, to let me know I wasn't forgotten. And for a kid, that was so important to me, to know that even, of course, I was sick and I was frustrated with what was happening with me physically, but to be separated from your friends.
Right, that's tough.
And taken out of it and thrown into this totally different environment. And it was scary. We were at San Francisco Children's Hospital, and my mom went there with me, and my dad stayed home and took care of my sister with the help of my grandmother, his mother. But my mom took that time off her work and went up there, and she slept on the floor in the children's playroom so that she could be there with me. So it was tough on her family all the way around. But that sense of commitment to each other, and then knowing that I was still connected to something that was here at home, I think played a big part in me being able to fully recover.
Thank you so much for sharing that. That is such a great story. Do you still keep in touch with those teachers?
No, I haven't seen them in a long time. Mrs. Myers, I was in touch with her probably through high school. After sixth grade, my mom took my sister and I out of the public school system, and I attended Riverdale Christian Academy that's in Riverdale, and I went there until I graduated from high school. And that was a wonderful experience for me, because it gave me an opportunity to participate in a lot of different things. Since it was such a small school, they had a great music program, they had great theater productions that they did, and I was able to meet a lot of women that I think were very strong in the way that they supported their families and in the way that they gave back towards helping their children to grow. And I think that that is something that has been a big influence on the type of person that I am today, too.
Well, that's an incredible story. And okay, so I think it's fair to say that your young life was not boring or uneventful. Wow. Okay, so where do we go after Riverdale Christian?
Well, while I was at Riverdale Christian Academy during my senior year, in order to have the money to pay for my tuition and my uniforms, I took a job in Hanford working at the Burger King. And so I would go to Riverdale in the morning, go to school, then drive all the way to Hanford, work till 2 in the morning, and then go back home. To
2 in the morning?
Because I could work the swing shift. They were happy for me to, you know, work closing shift.
Wow. You worked till 2 in the morning, and you had to be at school at what time?
8 o'clock. And, you know, with the fog.
Wow, that's insane. That is insane. And how old
are you?
Yeah,
but I was 16 at the time, and
that's
I had that
insane.
Endless, that bucket of energy that you just keep drawing from.
Wow.
I was motivated because I wanted to stay in that school, and I needed to be able to help my parents in order for that to happen. And my family has a very strong work ethic. I didn't think twice about, this is what I need to do to get it done. And so by taking that job, I was able to pay a car payment, help my parents out, pay my tuition, buy my uniforms, and sponsor myself and sometimes another student to go on special trips when we would perform with the choir or go to different conventions. And even though I didn't have much left over at the end of a paycheck, I was just so proud of myself for being able to do that.
And you have every reason to be.
That it just motivated me to try to do more. And but the reason I tell you that is that's where I met Joe. I was working there, and
I love this story.
You know, I think people who have such glamorous how they met their husband stories. And And I remember the exact moment that I saw him for the first time. And it's funny that what we were decked out in was orange corduroy. That made a lasting impression. But his best friend worked there at the Burger King and was dating a manager there at the time and was able to get Joe a job there during his winter break from UC Berkeley. He was there at his during his first year. So Joe was there to work a couple of weeks, and I was waiting to sign on for my shift, just sitting in a booth with a couple other girls that I worked with. And I remember when he came in the door at the other end of the restaurant.
Was it a moment?
It was for me. It was a moment. I don't know. But I just looked at him and I thought, who's that? You know, it's just like, hello.
Wow.
And he was just the nicest guy I ever met. And he, at the time, I was dating somebody else. So I said, okay, I'm not going to cross this line. I just thought, wow, he's a really nice guy. And then over the time that he was working there, every time I had a break, he had a break, which I thought was odd. And then if you worked a closing shift, you always had to have a guy walk you to your car.
Sure.
And he always was the volunteer to walk me to my car.
Okay.
So that gave us extra chances to talk to each other and get to know each other. And
I'm guessing somewhere in there, there had to be a moment for him, too.
You'd have to ask him about that.
Exactly.
That's
he wouldn't have been,
right?
He would not have been volunteering, I think.
But his friend helped him out a lot. You know, friends do wonderful things for us along our life. This was one of them.
And again, how old were you at the time?
I was 16. I turned 17 during that time.
Right. And he would have been?
And he was 18.
Okay.
So just a year apart. So I was 17, he was 18. And I just remembered that he was unlike anybody else I had known, in that he talked about all these plans for the future. And he talked about, we had real in-depth conversations about things that nobody else brought up or, didn't interact with me on that level.
So
and
you immediately had a lot in common.
We had a lot in common.
And like minds.
We did. And then we found out that our families had similar values. Even though our backgrounds are different, our families had similar core values, and that we had somewhere along the line growing up had been in the same places at the same time, but had not known each other. And then, his time there was over and he went back to school and I just kept working. And that was it until the relationship with the other guy ended in February, and his buddy got on the phone and told him immediately. Guess what? She's available. And so then he started writing.
I have to ask. Did the relationship with the other boyfriend go away because of meeting Mr. Castro?
Joe didn't do anything to make that happen. But my way of thinking changed after meeting Joe. My way of thinking about what a guy could be in my life at 17, and that everybody looks for different things. But he inspired me to want more for myself. And that wasn't something that was always said in the environment I grew up in.
Okay.
It was pretty much taken for granted that there was a path you were going to follow, and that's a fine path, but this was the square that you're put into. And during the time that Joe and I met and we were talking, he would tell me, you're really smart. There's so much more you could do. Have you thought about going to school? Have you thought about this and that? He just opened up these other possibilities to me that I never looked at. And so it changed the way I thought about the world. It changed the way I thought about myself. And just maturing through taking that job and meeting people from different backgrounds, from different faiths, with different life experiences, it just started to open things up. And I just felt kind of like, a rosebud starting to bloom. As my petals started to unfold, I just wanted to see what else is out there.
So it sounds like he has a very nurturing nature about him.
He does.
And that obviously is very compelling.
Well, what you see is what you get with Joe. He has always been the nice guy.
Such a great quality.
And it's great when somebody says that in a positive way. But
okay, so his friend called him and said,
friend called him and said,
heads up.
The other guy's gone. Yeah. So he started writing to me. So he started writing. He started calling. He started sending flowers.
Oh, my. He was serious.
He was reading some book. I don't know what.
Somebody was giving him hot tips.
Yeah. They were working.
Oh, my gosh.
My mom fell in love with him before I did.
Of course.
She said, you know, this guy's a keeper. And then my grandmother, when she met him, she fell in love with him. You know, just everybody liked him. I was a little reserved in where I thought, you know, this is too good to be true kind of thing.
I understand.
You know, you keep waiting for something's going to pop up. And I was just very naive, and I wanted to make sure that I wasn't, you know.
It's smart to be careful.
Yeah, I was going to be careful because as I was starting to learn more about myself, I didn't want to commit myself to anything, you know, on again.
So how long did you just string the poor guy along?
Well, he finally got the nerve to ask me on our first date, and that was in May. I was actually with my school back in Indiana at a convention.
Wow.
And I was singing and doing a couple of different things. And we were staying in the dorms there at Indiana State University when the phone rang.
Wow.
In the dorm where I have no connection to this place. But Joe had called the school, found out where we were at, was able to call there. And
so you can write down resourceful now on his list of skills.
When I answered it and they said, you know, I thought it was an emergency from home or something. And then I'm thinking, how the heck did they find me? And I heard his voice. I said, how did you get this number? And he told me the way he did it. And then I said, okay, well,
what's up?
Yeah, what's going on? And he said, well, I want to ask you on a date when you come back. So I was going to be there for a week. And we set the date for the Hanford Fair on July 6, 1985. That was our first date.
Wow. She knows the date and everything.
It was a great first date, yes. That was when we started dating officially, and that's been it. I was a goner after that.
So what was that date again?
July 6, 1985.
Okay, so July 6, 1985. How long did it take from July 6, 1985 until he popped the question and sealed the deal?
Well, that was a while because he was still going to school. And then I went to Dominican in San Rafael for a year. And we were, you know, still kept dating back and forth. We knew we wanted to finish school first. That was a priority.
Smart.
And so we just pretty much came to an agreement that him finishing first was what we needed to, like, pull our resources and really focus on. So that's how we did it. And then, you know, as we got married, as we had children and we were moving around with his career, I tried going back to school a few times, but we weren't able to be in one place long enough for me to finish.
So difficult. But give me an idea of all the different places you stopped real quick.
Well, we started off in Sacramento with his first position when he got his master's degree from UC Berkeley, and he started off in the Office of Public Relations for UC. And that was a great learning ground for him because he was able to see, you know, how policy was developed and make a lot of connections there. And he had some great mentors that helped him.
And how long were you guys there?
We were there for probably about 4 years. And then we went back to the Bay Area. We moved back to Albany. And he was if I'm going to go through his career.
Oh, don't go through his career. I just want to know. We'll save that for next week.
No, we went from Sacramento to Albany. Mm-hmm. We were there for a while. Then he said, you know, I think I want to try to pursue my PhD. And I was all for it. And we had two little ones at the time. And, you know, for me, that was my priority, was to get to be with the kids.
Full-time job.
Right. And I was really blessed that I was able to do that during that time. And then we moved over to Palo Alto while he was going to Stanford. And then we bought our first home in Newark that was in the middle, so that half of the week he would go over and work as the assistant dean at the graduate school in Berkeley. And then the other half of the week he would drive over to Palo Alto and take his classes at Stanford. We had a house with a room that we could have as an office, and I was like his little assistant, helping him keep things organized as he was doing his dissertation research and making appointments for him, doing those type of things to support him. But he just had such drive to get it done. He finished in 4 years.
Amazing.
Which was, you know, incredible. Then we moved here to Clovis because he was hired to be part of the founding team for UC Merced at the time. The chancellor had been named and she appointed him, and we showed up here. They gave him the keys to a building on Shaw Avenue and said, Okay, go ahead, start. UC Merced. Wow. He walked in. There was no furniture, no telephone, no staff. But
well,
that's
they had
the great
faith.
Challenge.
Yeah, they had great faith in him, obviously. It's like, here's the ball. Run with it.
It was such a wonderful opportunity. And we've just tried to make ourselves available, open to when an opportunity to comes up for us to go with it. And in doing that, we've both been able to have wonderful experiences with him getting to be part of a campus being built. How often does that
right.
happen?
That is very,
and then,
very cool.
We went from Clovis to Santa Barbara. He worked at UC Santa Barbara, and I worked there in the financial aid department and also in the education abroad. And then from there, we went to the Bay Area. Then we were able to come back home, and that
wow.
was just
you guys
the
have
best.
Hopped around. But at least it was all in California.
Yes. Well, that was important to us because, I mean, this is back before there was Skyping and all this, you know, all the technology now that allows people to keep in touch over
yeah.
long distances. And my father is deaf mute, and in order for me to be able to stay in an area close, I wanted to be close to my dad.
Right.
And Joe's real close with his grandparents. We wanted to be within driving distance of our parents. So as long as something came up that we could do to where we could still be within driving distance, we did that. Being by our family was a priority. And we always hoped to come back, but as we were going along, we didn't see how it could happen. But we just kept moving forward and hope that someday the opportunity would present itself. And so when it did, it was just overwhelming joy. I mean, we feel so blessed that we get to be here and get to be at Fresno State in our home community with our family. We've got our little guy who gets to be around his grandparents. So we couldn't ask for anything more.
So what was it like when you got the phone call at home that President Castro was nominated for that position? What was the conversation like?
Well, Joe came home and he said, you know, I had a phone call today and I was told that I had been nominated for the position at Fresno State. And
your first reaction was?
My first reaction was... Well, we had talked about him wanting to take the next step to become a president. And that conversation had happened, you know, probably within a couple of months of that.
Really?
That he had one, that it was something, were we on board? Were we going to, how were we going to do it? Is it something that,
that's,
you know,
is this the next logical step?
Is this something that you want to do with me?
Right.
You know, I'm thinking about this. What do you think? Should we do this? You know, so... When we talked about it, we said, well, you know, definitely I knew that Joe had a lot to offer at that level. And I, of course, supported him in it. But, you know, what the normal path would be is that you would have to leave the state or
oh,
you would
right.
have to go to an institution you don't really know much about.
So to be nominated for Fresno State must have been welcome news.
Right. You know, people say, oh, it's a pleasure to be nominated. We were really excited to be that someone thought that highly of him to put his name in like that for him to be considered. And then, you know, you don't want to get too excited at that stage. And we're thinking, oh, my gosh, if this could happen, we could be at home. We could get to, you know, we could get to be a part of such a great school. There's so much that can be done. We can help the kids in the valley.
No pressure, honey.
Right, right. But there are a lot of different roles that a spouse can take when your significant other is going to take on a presidency. And I think that, you know, the conversation was, where did I see myself and how involved did I want to be? And
you obviously had set a precedent to be enormously supportive of him for years. So I guess I'm not at all surprised to find out how that conversation went.
Well, it was such a welcome opportunity. And when we were here in Clovis, Joe had an opportunity to work with the Welties. And so we knew them. And, you know, we were excited that with the job that they had done and all the positive things that he had done in the campus, that we thought it would be a wonderful kind of stepping stone for us, if it could happen, for us to come here and to get the community as involved as possible and to, you know, make good things happen.
Such a great story. Such a great story. So, okay, now you've hopped all over California.
Right.
And now you get to come back basically home to mm-hmm. Fresno and be very close to Hanford and the family. And so what happens first? Do you just move into the university house? Is that what happens first?
No. Well, the whole process was, you know, it was a long process. Normally, when you apply for a job, you know, you go interview fast, you find out fast, and it's said and done. But it was a long process. And we knew it was a sensitive process. So we were trying to respect the order in which it was to be conducted. And then the morning that his appointment was announced, I immediately started started getting phone calls and texts different postings being put up saying, you're the first lady of Fresno State. And I hadn't thought about, you know, I thought about what it would mean for Joe. I thought about, you know, I wanted to support him in any way possible. But then I thought about when someone addressed me like that, I thought, what an honor. What an honor that they think that I could have a role where I could contribute to enhancing programs or, you know, just doing positive things on campus. And so when I first heard it,
Wow, that's me?
Yeah, you know, when I heard First Lady, I knew that it was a term that was used a lot at East Coast schools for spouses. And I also know that there are some spouses who don't like to use it. They're professionals or they have other titles that they've earned that they use. And what I found was when we were in settings and someone would address me that way, that they were trying to find, they knew the president, and then they were trying to find a way to address me, to show me respect, and to also, for me, it felt welcoming. It felt like they were telling me, you have a place here if you want it. And so the way I approached it was that when I got to campus, I just wanted people to know I'm available and I'm willing to do whatever it is that you see is appropriate for my role. And through doing that, people have contacted me. They have kind of led me into what they want me to do, what they hope for me to do, or where they see my place on the campus. And it's been such such a welcome embrace to know that there is a role for me here that they see is as important and that they want me to fill. And for me, that's exciting because the more I learn about this campus, the more I get to go around, the more I interact with the students, I just feel like I'm the biggest cheerleader for Fresno State. And I want to get out there and let everybody know about all the wonderful things that are going on here and the incredible talent we have with our professors. And of course, we have fabulous students and how much they love Fresno State. And when Joe and I are out at different events and we meet people, I love to hear them tell me about their passion, what connects them with this campus, and what makes them want to stay connected with this campus. And you hear the stories of from first in the family, what inspired them to take that leap and come here, to legacies who we've met, the grandparents, the parents, the great, you know, going all the way down to where this is their place. And I just want to tell more kids, especially in the Central Valley, that this is your place. This is your Fresno State Bulldog family. Mm-hmm. We're here for you. We're waiting for you. And we can help you reach your goals.
So many great stories, which brings me to the fact that we're going to be here each week.
Yes.
And be able to tell those stories and tell us about maybe some of your ideas of who you might want to bring into the studio and spend some time with.
Well, I feel like I'm looking out onto a field that is just
exactly
ready to be harvested. I think a great starting point is that we have a group of the Provost Award winners that are outstanding faculty members. And we have 9 outstanding faculty members that were recognized from this past year, that they are amazing. And they, the Provost Award, he also has a lecture series, Provost Andy Hoff, he has a lecture series where they get to present, each person present. And I've had an opportunity to sit in on a few of those. One that I went to was with Professor Nora Chapman.
Okay.
And she just blew me away. She made me want to sign up for every class she takes. Her passion for learning, her connection to the Valley, her love for what she does and her commitment to her students. And this is just one.
Just you know? One. Great so, compassion.
Right. And then yesterday I was at the book signing for Dr. Paul Ogden through the Communicative Disorders, Deaf Studies. And he wrote an autobiography called My Secret Garden. And the auditorium was full of people there who respect him. He has an incredible story. And everybody who was up there giving him respect and recognizing him had an incredible story. And it goes beyond, you meet people and they tell you what they do, but it goes beyond what they do. It goes to the heart of their passion. It goes to the thing that inspired them, that put that spark in their eye. And I just love talking to people and finding out what's that spark in your eye? What keeps you going? What is it about what you do? What is it about Fresno State that makes you want to be here every day?
Great, great personal stories. We want to share those stories.
Definitely.
I can't wait for you to bring people in and tell those stories each week. And hopefully KFSR listeners are able to get a better idea of the wealth of talent and ability that is at this university. This is going to be so much fun.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
Although before we go there, you said that you actually had a special guest you wanted to bring in next week.
He's had his picture up around campus for a while. And I think that it would be great for our first show to be with President Castro, give you a little background on him, and let him tell you a few stories that haven't been printed yet.
Exactly. See, this is what I love about this idea, is that the president's not going to come in and I'm not going to interview him. Mm-hmm. He's probably going to have the toughest interview ever because you're going to interview him. It's going to be so great. So thank you for volunteering him.
Well, he's a good sport for being willing to do it.
So he does know about it.
Oh, he knows about it.
And he's good with it?
I think I have to trade a few of his favorite dishes in order for
him. I understand.
We worked out the deal.
I think I could just sit here and talk to you for another like 2 hours easily. But I will have chances to get these questions in later. So we're running out of time. So I guess I should wrap this up. Why don't we talk about how people can reach you? Because I have to say that if I've noticed anything about you and the president, it's been how incredibly accessible you have been. You have been so welcoming to everyone and so friendly. And honestly, that in itself, I believe, is part of the reason why you probably feel so welcome, is because you're making everybody else feel so welcome to know the two of you.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's, you know, it's just what our personality is. Joe and I are open people, and we want everyone to feel comfortable. We want everybody to feel comfortable around us. When I host events, I treat people just the same way I would as if they were family coming to our home. I have a great time when I see other people enjoying whatever we're doing and helping someone else to be successful, helping someone else to get that answer that maybe they weren't able to get somewhere else. That is what makes me smile. That's what makes me feel like I can go to sleep at the end of the day knowing that I really did something productive. And if I can help support others in any other way, then I feel like, you know, I've got a real good thing going here. I get to be blessed all the way around. And the best way for me to show my appreciation to the one that makes this possible is by me giving it to others.
That's awesome. Okay. How do we find you on Twitter?
You can find me at mgcastro5.
And you're willing to give out an email address too?
Yes. The email address is macastro@csufresno.edu.
Okay.
It's funny how that came about because my middle initial is not A.
Well,
so it sounds like Ma Castro. And our little guy, who's going to be 3, when he started addressing me, he started calling me Ma.
Wow, okay.
And none of our other children have done that. And he doesn't have experience of riding a horse on the wild range. So we didn't
know
where
that
this
came
from. But all of a sudden, I was Ma. And it was at the time when we came here. And they told me that my name and initial combination wasn't available. So they assigned Ma Castro to me.
What are the chances? What are the chances? That is so cute. Well, thank you. Thank you for your time today. And thank you for being part of this brand new show on KFSR.
I look forward to it.
So exciting. First Lady's Focus. And Mrs. Castro, thank you for your wonderful stories. Thank you for being so open. And we absolutely look forward to next week with President Castro and getting to know him a little bit better as well.
Sure. Thank you.
KFSR presents First Lady's Focus every Sunday morning at 10. For a complete program schedule, visit KFSR.org.